Good morning and welcome to the FWE E-Series Pitching and Investment Training Conference Call. I would like to introduce Christina Anthony. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Well, welcome. Thank you. And sorry we started a tad late here. We just wanted to make sure we gathered all of the participants from across the country to make sure that everyone was able to participate live here on this call. I'm the founder of FWE and a chair of the board, and it's my complete pleasure to welcome you all today for, in many cases, your first introduction to FWE, and in some, you've known FWE, but you've not been in E-Series before, and we have some E-Series alums. So welcome, everybody. We will be, of course, doing a proper welcome and introduction to the whole E-Series program when we see you in a couple of weeks. But really today is about learning about the pitch process, because we need to do some prep. You'll need to do some prep in terms of, being ready for your PowerPoint pitch presentations that are all part of the learning process. And you'll need to do some of that work in advance. So we wanted to give you whatever tools that we could in advance, and engaging an expert like Mike Volker, who will be introduced shortly, to really be able to help you do that, and so that we can answer questions that you may have. I wanted to, first mention that the context in which we're doing this call is that you will each be doing a 3-minute pitch on the Friday of E-Series, and this pitch would be about asking for financing for angel investment, but really, the skills, in terms of presenting and how to talk about your company would be similar whether you're asking for money from an angel investor to if you're pitching for, a key customer, or you're pitching to a key supplier, or you're asking your bank for a loan for money. And so really a lot of the learning would come into play any time that you're talking about your business. To put it in context, the types of investment that exist out there for entrepreneurs can vary from, free grants and ways that people would provide money to you, to debt, which is where you borrow money, and that's where you might go to your bank for lines of credit or other types of loans. And then there's equity, and that's where someone actually puts skin in the game to invest with you and be a part of your long-term success down the road. And that's where the equity investment comes in. So this call is really about that equity investment piece, but again, it is a lot of the learnings can be translated. And so when we talk about angel investors, these are people or groups of people who are willing to participate in your business at an early stage, and they are taking a lot of risk because it's early days, but they also expect, they're doing it because they want a longer return. They're here to provide that financing when maybe others might not. Maybe some of the other types of equity investors are not ready to, because they want to see the business be a lot bigger, in the many, many, many millions range, either in terms of revenue or whatever other way that you're going to measure the success of a business. One thing I wanted to address is, if you don't actually need money, should you still have a pitch ready? And the answer is yes. So a lot of people might think, well, I'm not really looking for financing, so why would this part of the training matter to me? And it's really that, number one, you're probably going to need money at some point. Every business always needs capital one way or the other. It just may vary based on what kind of capital you're going to try to get. And so you might as well be ready and prepared. And often people like to look for money when they don't need it, because you're not desperate and you can get that money kind of teed up in advance of when you're actually going to need it, because otherwise it might be too late. But also it's that learning, where learning how to pitch is really going to help you. So think of it like business development. I'm going to turn it over now to Larkin to properly introduce Mike, because really Mike is the expert who's going to give you all the major tips that you need for learning how to pitch for angel investment. Larkin?
Wonderful. Thank you, Christina, and good morning, everyone. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larkin.
I'd like to introduce everybody. So Mike, the infamous Mike Volker, of course, he's a high-tech entrepreneur and investor who has been involved in the development of many different technology-based businesses. He has over 30 years of experience with tech ventures. He started West Volker Craig founded it in 1973 and merged it with a public entity in 1981. Since then, he's been involved with many technology enterprises as an investor, mentor, or director. His area of expertise is financing, marketing, technology licensing, and intellectual property matters, or IP matters. And he's a frequent writer and contributor to business journals and publications. He is also, or I should say, in 2009, Mike was named the Canadian Angel Investor of the Year by the National Angel Organization, as well as the BC Angel of the Year by the BC Angel Forum. So we are so grateful to have Mike joining us this morning. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
So we will kick it off. We're switching our format this year. We're going to keep it very conversational, sort of Q&A, but it'll be Mike and I back and forth, and then we will open the lines up for Q&A at the tail end. Once Mike leaves us, if anyone has any questions regarding E-Series, just stay on the line, and you can ask those directly. So let's kick it off, Mike. Now, as Christina mentioned, these women are going to be pitching for 3 minutes next week, but how long would a typical pitch be, and what are the key points that should be covered?
I think that it's really important to get your message out in a minute or less. Now, if you have 3 minutes, great. Put the key points out first and then embellish a little bit. If you have 10 minutes, same thing. If you have 15, the same thing. It's interesting because in our Vantech meetings, our monthly angel meetings, for example, we allow entrepreneurs a 5-minute pitch followed by 5 minutes of Q&A, and we also have these so-called sneak previews where we only give them 90 seconds. And my experience is that often the 90-second ones are more effective because they're kind of like an infomercial. It forces the entrepreneur to really crystallize, what the business opportunity is all about, and to make that very succinct without drifting off into technical details or other matters. So, in my humble opinion, the shorter the better, and the key thing is to keep it as succinct as possible.
Now, can I ask you some questions on the technicalities? So because, as you say, because it's, I'm glad to hear you say that you like the shorter pitch, by the way. Are there any technicalities with respect to a PowerPoint? Like, do you have any hard and fast rules about how many slides per minute or what generally people should be focusing on with respect to the technical
Sure.
aspect?
Yeah, as far as PowerPoints go, my recommendation is 1 to 2 slides per minute.
Mike?
Are you not
Mike,
hearing
me?
You may be on mute there for a second. Okay,
thanks. Got you again.
I don't think so.
We've got
can
you back.
Not...
I can hear you. I can hear you.
Oh, yeah. No change at my end. Okay, that's good. So I don't know how much of that you heard, but I was just saying, a couple of slides per minute. So for a one-minute opportunity, maybe 2 slides. For 5 minutes, you might use as many as 10 slides. And the important thing is to not put a lot of detail in those slides, because if you have a lot of fine print, especially financial projections and things like that, people will start to read that, and they won't focus on you. They'll try to understand what it says in your slide, and you don't want that to happen. So big fonts are really important, and I would recommend using pictures and illustrations, diagrams, and things like that as much as possible, because as the saying goes, a picture's worth 1,000 words.
So true. And are you a fan of animations?
A little bit. Well, let me be careful about this. Whenever an entrepreneur has an animation or a video, there's usually some technical glitch, and then it eats into their time. Sometimes the audio doesn't work. Sometimes if it's streaming over the Internet, there's a poor Internet connection. So you're exposing yourself to a potential technical vulnerability, and then if it doesn't work, what do you do? So our general recommendation to entrepreneurs is to avoid videos. And a small animation, like a GIF animation, might be okay, but videos are not that great because it's better for the audience to see the person, hear the person, and then if you like, you can give them a link or like an email with a link in it to a video if they want more information later. But I think in a live pitch, you don't want in a 90, you were saying you've got 3 minutes. So out of your 3 minutes, you wouldn't want to take a third or a half of that 3 minutes. with people watching a video, especially if it's not technically clean.
Right. Wonderful. Thank you. And do you have a preference, or would you make a recommendation with respect to whether they should memorize their pitch or whether they should have notes? Do you have a preference there?
No notes. bad. No notes. Because it looks like the entrepreneur is not really familiar with their business. And, you know, it goes back to the elevator pitch. If you are literally in an elevator with an investor, you're not going to pull out your notes. You're going to have to wing it. And, you know, usually when you wing it and talk from the heart, it comes across as more sincere rather than, you know, reading from a book.
Right, and that probably speaks to, you know, when you're writing your elevator pitch, make sure that you're writing it in language that you would normally use and that you're writing it in a way that feels natural for you to say, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. Don't get too technical.
Don't use $5 words.
yeah, exactly.
Now, for next week in our pitch session, the entrepreneurs will have 3 or 4 minutes for questions from the pitch mentor afterwards. Do you have any tips on that portion? Anything they should focus on or that you tell people when they're prepping for kind of a Q&A?
I think the important thing is to really talk about the opportunity of the business and to be really clear on what that is. There's really sort of 2 value propositions. You often hear that term value proposition, but I believe there are 2 that you have to think about. One is, you know, what's the value proposition for the customer? Who are you selling to? What are you selling to them? Why are they going to buy it? And how are you going to sell gazillions of whatever it is so that you're going to make a lot of money? The second value proposition is for the investors. So the investors want to hear the first. They're obviously interested in what you're doing to make money. But secondly, they need to know, how are they going to make money? How long is their capital going to be tied up? And then when they do have an opportunity to do a proverbial exit, what's the expectation? Are they going to make, you know, 5 times their money back in 5 years, or is it 10 times in 10 years? Or is there going to be some kind of a management buyout where they get bought out from cash flow or dividends or whatever? So those 2 have to be addressed, and the entrepreneur should be totally familiar with those 2 value propositions.
Wonderful. Thank you. And, of course, those 2 value propositions, you know, they'd sort of lead in with kind of a pitch would start off with who they are, what their business is, who their customer is, and then go into those 2 value propositions.
Right.
Wonderful. So
often, the key point is, what is it that the company's selling? And the more clear you can make that, you know, with an illustration or an example, the better it is. And then what is it about that product or service that are really going to compel people to buy it? And I kind of like that word. You know, it has to be compelling. If you're just opening up another donut shop, that sounds kind of boring. But, you know, if you've got something that's going to, you know, some secret sauce or recipe that's really going to put Tim Hortons out of business, that's what investors want to hear. So why are people going to flock to it? And I guess if you have time in these presentations, you'd also go a little deeper and then say, why is it you, the entrepreneur, why are you going to be able to make this happen? What gives you that competitive advantage?
Well, and I think that probably goes into, you know, when the entrepreneurs are talking about sort of the who they are off the top, make sure that they are explaining why they are so well equipped.
Yes. Yeah, having, you know, showing that there's either experience from work history or domain expertise or some skills or talent. And it may be as simple as just that entrepreneurial drive, that, you know, absolutely committed 724 attitude that's going to make it happen. But whatever it is, I think it's good to articulate that. What is it that's going to make an investor feel really good about investing in that company, and i.e. by extension in that person? Because you're really investing in the key person, and the team that that person puts together. And so that's very important.
Wonderful. And what would you say kills a pitch? Like, what are your, I don't want to say pet peeves, but what have you seen people do that you just think, oh, no, that pitch has just gone sideways?
Well, two things. BS, a bit too much fluff when people use words like, well, you know, we're a world-class company and we're going to dominate and, you know, we're going to be a billion-dollar business and we're chasing a $100 billion market. I mean, that's all hype and it's fluffy and it doesn't mean anything. So it's better to be, you know, very precise, very down to earth, and not hype too much. So, you know, I mean, being positive and enthusiastic and ambitious is great, but there's a fine line between that and being a bit of a hypester, hyping a bit too much. The other thing is coming off as a bit of a know-it-all. A big turnoff for investors is if the entrepreneur has all of the answers, whereas if a question is asked and the entrepreneur says, well, you know, that's a good point, and I don't have an answer for you on that, that shows a degree of honesty and integrity that's very valuable. So it's really important to not, exaggerate too much or come across as a know-it-all, because, you know, business is all based on experience, and successful businesses are built by maybe first-time entrepreneurs, but some people in the background with experience. And so investors don't necessarily expect an entrepreneur to have all of the answers, but if there's that indication that they're bluffing a little bit or stringing a line, that can be a deal killer.
Well, and I would think that it goes hand in hand with, you know, you're asking these people to give you their money or to invest in your company, and so you as an investor want to trust the person to whom you're entrusting your money.
Totally.
So that moment of admitting that you don't know an answer immediately establishes honesty, I would think.
Yes, it does. And, you know, you might say what you're doing about it or whatever, but I think it's the honesty that's important, because a big deal killer is a sign of, some lack of integrity. Lack of integrity is just so important and can kill a deal.
Absolutely. And so along those lines, what would you say impresses an investor or a potential client, to see those from two sides?
I think really being passionate about the business, being committed to it, having a lot of confidence in the business, and really understanding the industry, knowing the competitors. Going back to your previous question, a bit of a deal killer is sometimes not knowing who the competitors are. I sometimes hear entrepreneurs make a pitch, and while they're pitching, I do a quick Googling, and I find a company that looks like they're doing something similar, and then I put my hand up and I ask the question, well, have you heard of company so-and-so? And they look kind of puzzled. And so that's a bit worrisome if the entrepreneur doesn't know the competitive landscape. So knowing the business, knowing the industry, knowing who the customers are, where they are, how to get to them, that's all important. Knowing competition is really important, because at the end of the day, the only thing you really have to worry about is competition. Because, you know, think about it, if there's no competitors, well, you know, you've got a home run. You don't have to worry.
Exactly.
Really understanding your competitors, your current ones and future ones. And I would even go so far as to say, you know, if you don't think you have competitors, look at what it is that people are doing presently to solve the problem that you're addressing, because that's kind of the status quo, and you could look at that as a competitor. But I get very, very worried when an entrepreneur says, oh, boy, we're so good and so smart, we have no competitors. It also makes the investor think, well, if there are no competitors, maybe they're not in an industry that has a lot of potential customers.
Right. So it really is that fine line. But it's what I'm really hearing is make sure you are well-versed, that you know yourself.
Yep.
Because as much as we say, it shows integrity to say, you know, that you don't know the answer to something. You do not want to be caught up there on that stage not being aware of who your competitors are. Do you agree with that,
right,
Mike?
Yep, exactly. You know, coming across with a compelling case, understanding your competition, having industry knowledge, that impresses investors.
Wonderful. Thank you. Mike, can you tell us a bit, what are the options, what are the other options for funding?
Yeah, so, you know, for startups looking at equity, of course, I think angels are the best way to go. Once you get some results and revenues grow, then institutional investors like VCs may come in, but they generally won't invest early. They're looking for much larger opportunities where the exit values are, you know, $100 million and over, and they typically look at investing larger amounts, $2 million and more. So at the very early stages, when you're just getting going, it's angels, really, and that would include perhaps family, friends, relatives, because they're friendly angels, I guess, and they like you, and so they may just be keen to helping you. But that's all on the equity side. On the non-equity side, I would encourage people to look at government programs. And there's just a ton of them. It's just amazing how many programs are out there to provide assistance, everything from the scientific research and experimental development tax credits, the industrial research assistance program, employee subsidies, tax credits in the case of investors, especially here in British Columbia. So there's a lot of government programs. And they're kind of free, and they're not dilutive to the entrepreneurs and the shareholders. So I'd certainly encourage that. The National Research Council has what they call the NRC Concierge Service, and that has been set up to help people navigate through all these government programs. And if you go to the NRC website, you can find out who these people are and phone numbers for them and give them a call and, you know, take a look at all these government funding options. And then, of course, we have debt, and that would include bank loans for those who have homes. You know, nothing wrong with mortgaging your home. In fact, that makes investors feel good if you're on the hook with some of your own assets involved in the business. Even credit cards. You know, I know entrepreneurs who've taken out 5 or 6 credit cards and have maxed them out. The interest rates may be high for credit cards, but it's still a lot cheaper using a credit card than it is giving up equity, because, you know, equity is really the most expensive form of financing, because you're giving up a share of your business, a percent of your business, forever. You know, if you're bringing in angels and, you know, say you need $500,000 and you're giving up a third of your business for that $500,000, which, by the way, is a good metric and kind of an industry average, then you have given up a third of that venture forever. And that's expensive, especially if it becomes very successful. Now, if it fails, then great, it hasn't been expensive. But if it's highly successful, then that's very, very expensive. So, you know, if you feel really good about it, it's good to borrow personally, borrow from family members, mortgage your home, and absolutely look at all of the government programs that are out there.
Well, I think it's very reassuring to hear you say you're really making debt sound more friendly than I think generally we all think of it as. I mean, the moment you said debt, I had a little constriction in my throat, because whenever we hear debt, Canadians, we get uncomfortable. So it's fascinating to hear you reframe it in that way.
I think a blend is good. You know, you don't want all debt, because you may be kind of vulnerable to the debt investors, depending on the terms of the investment. So it could be a bit dangerous having too much debt, but a blend of debt, equity, and certainly the what I call golden capital, the government programs, which for all intents and purposes are, you know, you're really getting taxpayers to invest in your business, and they don't expect anything in return. So, you know, that's really, really a great thing to take advantage of. But I think a blend is important. But I wouldn't be bashful about considering debt. I think it has a place. And there are, by the way, more companies now, I'm involved with one in particular, that will lend or invest against cash flow. So, for example, once you start to generate revenue, you can take advantage of so-called revenue-based financing. And the way that works is, and just to give you an example, I would give you, say, $100,000, and you would pay me back out of your revenues, say, 2 or 3% of your monthly sales. And then when I get back a negotiated amount, which could be, let's say, 2 times my capital, so I'd give you $100,000, and in 3 or 4 years, I, on a cumulative basis, have gotten back $200,000 by virtue of getting 2 or 3% per month of your monthly revenues, then I'm gone. You've paid me back. You haven't diluted your shareholders or yourself, and you've paid me entirely out of your cash flow. And we're going to see more of these kinds of funding opportunities, and they're very useful once you do start generating revenue. But raw debt at the early stages, even before you have revenue, is still something you should be considering.
Thank you. And so at what stage of a business would these or should these entrepreneurs consider getting funding? Like at what stage, given that you're saying try to do a blend, but really understand that it's okay to feel more comfortable with debt. When would you recommend that they start pursuing getting funding?
A lot of, to answer that question, it depends a little bit on how much you're looking for. You know, and if you're looking for small amounts, like if it's 40 or 50,000 or even 100,000, then you don't have to do too much planning and preparation for that. That's probably money you can borrow from people, you know, and you would pursue that as soon as your business plan shows that your cash flow dictates it, you know, as soon as you know that you're going to need the funding to support your cash flow to get you to break even. But as a general rule, I would say, you know, in the early stages when you're doing business planning, you would be looking at, well, where is the cash going to come from to fuel my cash flow? And it would make sense to start talking to those potential suppliers of capital right away, because, you know, it's dangerous to go to an investor and say that if you don't get funded tomorrow, you're not going to make payroll for your employees by the weekend. That's also another turnoff for an investor, because it shows you haven't planned ahead, and, you know, with your back against the wall and running out of cash, that's pretty bad. So you want to get investors interested. The sooner the better. And it's, even if you don't need the funding, but you know you're going to need it, it makes sense to start opening the doors and warming up investors, get them to know you. Because, you know, angel investing especially is very much a relationship-type business. And investors aren't investing in some abstract thing. They're investing in you and your team. So it's, you know, people, it's getting a comfort level. I was just at a meeting this morning where a deal fell apart, and I said, why did that happen? And it was entirely because the investor just couldn't get comfortable with the people. Nothing to do with the technology or the business or the opportunity. The investor just simply didn't get that a good feeling. That's all it was, and that's how they could explain it. And it's as simple as that. So, really important to start the process early.
Well, and you touched upon something that I think Christina brought up off the top, which is one of the reasons that it's important for everyone to have their elevator pitch ready or to be comfortable with pitching is that the best time to look for money is when you don't need it, as they say,
right.
That it's best to be proactive on that front.
Yeah, and it gives you a negotiating advantage, right, because
mm-hmm.
you're not desperate.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say to our entrepreneurs who are listening, we just wanted to let you know that, you know, when it comes to how much you're asking for and what kind of investments are you offering, that component of preparing your pitches, we are here. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out. I know that for some, preparing your pitch can feel a bit nerve-wracking. So please know that we here at the office are here to support you. We're here to answer any questions. We can put you in touch with board members who are more than happy to support you through this process because we understand that it can make people feel nervous to prepare their pitch. So please feel free to reach out to us. We are here to support you. So I know that please know that that is exactly what we're here for. So, Mike, on the call, we have a lot of service-based but also product-based businesses. Do you have any tips for – is there any way that the pitches should be different? Should they change anything up specifically?
You know, not really, because you're selling a solution, and that solution may be in the form of a service. You know, software, for example, is really, I would look at that as a service, especially a lot of online-type software that's subscription-based. That's a service. Some people think of it as a product, but it is a service. A product, you know, you usually think of a gadget, a widget, something could be something you eat, a food product, whatever. But I think it comes down to the same thing. It's what is it that you are delivering that's going to make someone feel better or that's going to do something for someone? So I don't see a big difference. I think it's important, though, to explain what that is. You know, if you're making your money by supplying an ongoing service, investors should know that. If it's something that you're delivering, if it's a one-off type of thing without any recurring revenue coming in behind it, again, investors need to know that.
Okay. And the basic question, how do you find an angel investor? Where are they hiding out?
Well, that's easy. Come and talk to me. No, seriously, you know, we've got a national organization now, which is Canada-wide, and there are angel groups in every large city across the country, across the United States. And for that matter, you know, it's a global phenomenon. They're all over the place. I've been to angel meetings in Australia, India, all over. And they're pretty easy to find. You can Google them or you can go to these national groups. Like in Canada, it's NACO, the National Angel Capital Organization, and they'll point you to different groups. Here in Vancouver, of course, I'm involved with a group that we started about 20 years ago called Vantech. There's a couple of newcomers. There's a recent one called Open Angel. And then there's one that's been taking place on a semi-annual basis called the Angel Forum. But they're easy to find. You can find them through NACO. You can find them through Googling. And they're growing. And more people are getting involved in angel investing. There are, of course, a lot of angel investors who like to do things on their own and are a little more private, and they may not belong to any of these groups, but often someone who does belong to one of these groups can connect you with angels that maybe don't participate in these networks. As you can imagine, once word gets out that someone has deep pockets with money to invest, people start hounding them. So a lot of angel investors like to be a little bit more under the radar. They don't like to hang out a sign that says, here, come and talk to me, you know, because there's no shortage of deal flow in mm-hmm. angel investors generally, especially here in Vancouver, don't have to worry about enough opportunities to look at and consider.
Wonderful. Thank you. Well, you've certainly made angels sound as though they're among us.
They are.
I am.
They
thank
are.
You.
And I would also say they're not a homogeneous group. People often say to me, well, what are angels looking for? And what do they think about this or that? The nice thing about angels is they're individual people, and they all have their own little quirks and preferences. You know, some like to invest really early. Some like to invest even before the company is started or right at the time it started. Some will be more cautious and conservative, more risk-averse. They want to wait till there are real customers and real sales before they'll look at it. So if you talk to a couple of people and you don't score or they don't get excited, don't give up, because sooner or later you'll probably connect with someone that says, yeah, I can relate to that. They may even just relate to you. They may just say, gee, you know, I can help you because I understand this business. So it's all over the map. And that's the nice thing about angel investing. You know, conversely, if you talk to banks, they all think the same. Same thing with institutional investors. You know, they operate more like an industry with rules and models and paradigms. And once you get turned down by two or three institutional investors, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to talk to another dozen, because they'll probably turn you down too. But with angels, it's a different story. Of course, having said that, if you do get turned down by many, you know, you might go back to the drawing board and ask yourself, well, why am I getting turned down? But as a general rule, just keep in mind that they're not homogeneous, and they're all over the map in terms of their tastes and preferences.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've done a really great job of humanizing the angels. I'm just going to let everyone know we are going to open the lines up for questions for Mike. So if you have a question, please feel free to jump in. And I will say that I would think that for the women on the line, it's probably wonderful to hear how relationship-based it is to find your angel. That, as you say, they're not homogeneous. They're looking for very different things. And you know, as a woman, relationships are incredibly important. And so for us, it's probably very nice to hear that there's so much relationship building and trust and sort of person-to-person contact with an angel.
Indeed. And I would add, too, that we're seeing more and more women coming in as angel investors, which is very encouraging.
Well, we're grateful for you. Peter, do we have anyone on the line? Because I do have some questions I can continue with. But.
We do have one person that did queue up. We're just in the capturing their name. So as a reminder, if someone would like to queue up to ask a question, please press 01 now. Thank you.
Mike, do you feel like you're on the hot seat now while you're waiting for this question to come in? You're getting nervous? Do you feel like you're pitching?
Almost. I just have to be careful not to bluff or use any hype, right?
Exactly. Be honest.
Okay, so we actually have quite a few people that have queued up. The first person, we're able to capture their first name. So Tina, please go ahead.
Oh, hi. My question is, what considerations to pitch if you're planning on selling it?
Tina, do you mind repeating?
In terms of...
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. What are some considerations for if your plan is to sell your business?
I think it's what are some of the considerations if you're planning to sell your business that you'd consider in your pitch?
It's important to have, this addresses the second value proposition for the investors. So it's a good idea. In fact, it's almost mandatory, not just a good idea, to have some idea as to how you're going to have a liquidity event for yourself and for your investor. So if you are already clear on who might buy you and when, it would make sense to discuss that early on.
So really going back to just being honest about that right up front is what you're saying, Mike?
Well, if I understand the question right, it almost sounds like Tina that asked the question maybe already has her business at the stage where potential buyers or acquirers are looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, and all that's needed is a little bit of capital to get to the point of being sufficiently attractive to the buyer of the business, that is music to an investor's ears. The idea of not having to wait 10 or 15 years is important, and having actual takeover companies named and identified is very exciting and attractive to investors.
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you, Tina, for your question. Go ahead, Peter. I can hear you.
Thanks. Okay. Our next question comes from Carla Smith. Please go ahead, Carla.
Hi. A quick technical question. I've heard you guys say a couple of times that we have 3 minutes to pitch, but all of the information we received over email says 5 minutes, so I just wanted to make sure I know what I'm doing. But the big part of my question is if you're in an industry that's very niche and not well understood, how much of your pitch time should you spend explaining what that market is like to your audience?
I wouldn't spend a lot of time on that because, if it is something very esoteric, I think what you want to do is talk about what it does for the customer in that industry. You know, what kind of problem does it solve? You don't have to be very specific. It helps if you identify companies, for example, that might be the buyers. If it's a business-to-business type of venture where you're selling to corporations, then just identifying some as examples, I mean, they don't have to be current customers. They could just simply be prospective customers. But putting a name to them might be very useful. So, the danger is that if it's a very technical, very esoteric industry that you're selling into, a lot of investors may just not be that familiar with it. And in 3 minutes, you just don't have time to educate the investor. So you have to talk around it by dealing with what it does for somebody in that industry.
And Carla, I'm going to jump in just really quickly and answer your question about the 3 minutes. So we have changed it to 3 minutes, and that's based on some past feedback that we've received. So we didn't change the materials, and we do apologize for that, but it is 3 minutes.
And we want lots of good time for questions for you guys, and that's where the key learning is.
Okay, our next question comes from Jody Mitchell. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I am wondering, in your experience sitting in meeting rooms and being pitched to, how much value do you find when the person that's delivering the pitch is also bringing an actual example of the physical product for you to touch and feel? How much added value is there to that pitch when they have that item?
I love it. I think it's great. Because you can immediately relate to it, see what it is. Is it, you don't, and you save a lot of time. You don't have to describe it in as much detail. So I think if you have a prop, a photo, a model, anything that, makes it really easy for the investor to understand, that's wonderful.
Perfect. I just like to hear how much value added there is when people have that physical model to show off their product. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks, Jody.
Okay, so again, if you would like to queue up to ask a question, please press 01.
Does that mean that I can ask some questions, Peter, while we're waiting?
I think that's it for the queue right now, so we have no more questions in the queue. Back to you.
Wonderful. Then, Mike, you're back in my hands.
Okay.
Now, a question that we hear all the time, and I do think that we have touched on this in some areas, but we get asked a lot about, if I'm not looking for money, why should I have a pitch ready? And what is your big answer on that one?
In addition to money, what's the next most important thing you need in a company? Well, it's the talent. It's the people, because companies are all about inputs that consist of capital and talent, the people. So, you know, unless you're a sole proprietor, if you've got a business that is going to entail the hiring of employees, you should be able to get them excited, because they're really kind of investors too, especially if you're bringing them in, you know, on the promise of a future high salary and a current lower salary, perhaps, as is often the case. And especially if you're thinking of bringing your employees in with shares and making them partners, maybe in lieu of a lower salary at the outset, and getting them really engaged by being being a partner more so than an employee. But whether you go that route or just straight employees that you pay, I think they would like to hear your pitch. And perhaps your customers would like to understand. Your pitch would, of course, be tailored to the audience. But, you know, when you're selling your product, sometimes, again, depending what it is and who you're selling to, the buyers might like to know a little bit about you and your company, especially if they're going to depend on it in the future. They're going to want to know, well, are you going to be around tomorrow? If I buy today, can you supply or service me tomorrow? So, and then if your customers are government agencies, or perhaps if you're looking to government to provide some of these grants and forms of financial assistance that I mentioned earlier, you might want to pitch them and get them to understand what you're doing. So there's all kinds of people that you might pitch to, not just people who are going to invest cash.
I think you've really brought up a fascinating point there as well, which is that the customers that we're working with now and going forward are very savvy. They're going online. They're looking up the businesses. They're making decisions about purchasing in a way that we haven't seen before. So it makes sense to be able to pitch yourself in a way that people will remember. And so when they're speaking with their wallet, they're identifying with you and your story.
Right, right.
Now, Mike, is there? I think I just have time for one more question. Is there a magic revenue number that is more appealing to angel investors? You know, if you're only at 500,000, should you wait till you're at a million? What?
No, in fact, you may have no revenue, and it really goes back to my earlier comment about different stages of business development will appeal to different investors. And many investors prefer either no revenues or minimal revenues because they know that they can probably, for their investment, they can probably get a bigger piece of the action. They can probably get a bigger percentage of your company because you're kind of unproven and you don't have the revenues. Whereas if you're doing $2 or $3 million of sales, there's much less risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they provide their funding, you would obviously a $2 million revenue company is arguably worth more than a zero revenue company. So that will then determine which or what style or type of angel investors would be interested, but I don't think there's a magic number at all. I would, if I had to generalize, I'd say that some revenues are always appealing to angel investors because it shows that someone, yes, is buying into your idea or to your product. So, and if you don't have that, if you don't have actual cash sales, identifying the customers, the types of customers, or the demographics of the customer, male, female, age, location, etc., that would be important too to get that message out to investors.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Mike. Thank you so much for your time. It's been lovely chatting with you. I hope that everyone enjoyed the conversational format as much as I did. We will open the call to everyone for E-Series questions shortly, but Mike, thank you so much for joining us, and do you have any final comments to share with these ladies as they prep for their pitches next week?
Yeah, no, my pleasure. I enjoyed the interview and the discussion. I would just say if you have any specific questions, if you were too shy to chime in on the telephone, feel free to send me an email or call. I would also encourage you to look at, if you want to go to my website, I've got links to all of the different, a lot of the different things that I mentioned, like the local angel networks and so on. My website is just mikevolker.com, and on it I link to some of the local networks, the Vantech one in particular that I've been involved with now for a long, long time. It also has some material there that might help you in refining your pitch. There's some examples and suggestions there. There's also some resource information on the NACO website, the National Angel Capital Organization, and they have a lot of resource material there, especially when you get down to the point of negotiating. They've got some examples of not just pitches, but things like term sheets that would be the next stage to a pitch session. So I would just encourage everyone to take advantage of these resource materials that are out there.
Thank you.
And having said that, I'd say good luck to all of you in the pitches, and even more importantly, not just in your pitches, but I wish you all much success in your business ventures.
Thank you so much, Mike. We're so grateful to have you, and it was wonderful spending this time with you.
Okay, my pleasure.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now, anyone who is staying on the call, please feel free to hit the 01 if you have any questions about next week. We're happy to answer them. I believe that Michelle and I should be able to handle any of your questions. If not, we'll just be honest and tell you that we'll get you the answer afterwards.
Okay, so we have a few people that have queued up.
Great.
Okay, so the first one is Donna Tilden. Please go ahead.
Hi, Donna.
Hi. I was just, actually, I had a question for Mike, but
I have lost him. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I was just curious if it matters introducing yourself. Like, I know in the little document that you sent with kind of a description of what the 5 to 7 slides should include, there is a point where you introduce your team and yourself, but probably you should introduce yourself at the beginning as well and just say who you are and then dive into the problem. Is that
absolutely
what you're solving?
I think that saying who you are, and as we touched on briefly, talking about some of your background and how that relates to the business that you're in gives you that credibility.
Right up front.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And I would say that for the piece, for the, you know, that establishing trust and that starting that relationship, put
mm-hmm.
it right at the front, sort of who you are.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure if showing the problem first and then saying this is why I'm the credible person or, you know, vice versa, but I'm hearing that I should say I'm a credible person and then introduce the problem after.
Well, and it's interesting because you see pitches done different ways. I'm also happy to chat with you offline if you want to talk about this a bit more specifically, but I've certainly seen pitches done, you know, kicking it off with the problem and then why mm-hmm. you are the solution.
Okay. So it's a personal touch. It depends on, yeah, what works
so.
Best.
I think it
Thank
depends
you.
On the flow that you want. Oh, my pleasure.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry that it wasn't Mike Volker, but... You get me.
That's quite all right.
I'm not even
That's
close to
right.
a. I'm not even a close second. But hey, I'm
Are
here.
Are you as tall?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Our next question comes from Lisa Saragusa. Please go ahead.
Hello there. My question too was for Mike. So.
Oh boy. Larkin on the hot seat.
The question that I had was regarding. I'm not at this point in time in the mindset of. Asking for money, but absolutely appreciate the necessity of going through this exercise. Mm-hmm. So for the purpose of this, of the exercise, I guess the question is what and how, because I'm, when you're asking for, you know, for an angel investor, you're asking for X amount for whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, how do you evaluate that? And again, for the purpose of this exercise, how do I evaluate I'm looking for X amount for this?
Well, a key piece to the pitches definitely seems to be talking about what it is. You know, one of the five questions, of course, is what are you going to do with the money? So I would say that piece is, you know, what is it that you have in mind in terms of how much you're asking for? What is it that you would do with that money? And then, you know, in terms of the buy-in or what they would be getting, that would
yeah,
be
and helpful. I guess I'm just having and I guess that's where I'm stumped in this whole presentation is I don't know what to ask for because I'm at this point in time don't need. Have that need right now, and I know just because I don't have it now, that doesn't mean I'm not going to have it in the future, but I just don't know how to do that, because, you know, I don't want to ask for so much, and then they tear you apart because you're asking so much, and your business is only worth X amount, and I'm just having difficulties wrapping my head around that
yeah.
part of it, because you don't want to discredit yourself because you're asking for more than your business is worth.
Agreed. You know what? Let's. I will connect you with. I have a board member in mind who would be a great person
okay.
for you to chat with, or we can connect you with Mike via email.
Okay. All right.
So I will loop back with you after this call via email and make sure that you chat with someone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Our next question comes from Caroline Lunkarsik. Please go ahead.
Hi, Caroline.
Hi. Hi. Sorry, I'm really sick right now, so my voice might cut out.
I'm sorry. Hope better by next Wednesday.
I really hope so, too. My question was also for Mike, but I'll ask it here anyway. So I've been working with a couple people who, like, teach pitching at, like, UBC, like, their grad programs in business and that kind of thing, their venture programs.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been kind of, now they said everybody has a different idea on pitches, so there's no one right way, but they've been impressing upon us kind of the importance of just selling yourself, your story, the problem, the solution, and really not getting into the nitty-gritty details of the business or your financial forecast or even asking or valuing your company right on the spot, you know, just say, hey, I'm looking for seed funding of $200,000. Because they say that your goal is really to get that first meeting and so that when you have that first meeting, there's more for the investor to discover. And then when there's the second meeting, there's even more for them to discover. So if in your pitch, you give them everything right on the spot. One, it's information overload. And two, if you pitch one day and the investor gets in touch with you 3 weeks later, in a growing business, so much can happen. If you make a sales deal, if you, you know, have some sort of success, your valuation can jump as quickly as 3 weeks. And so by saying something right on the spot in that pitch, you're kind of selling yourself short. And I wanted to know what your guys' opinions on that are because I've kind of revamped my whole pitch since November.
Well, I would certainly agree with that right off the top. I mean, when Mike said that basically that impression is formed in that first 60 seconds. It's kind of like dating. This is kind of your first time of interacting, and
mm-hmm.
you want them to go away wanting more. And I think that if you do get into the nitty-gritty of the numbers right off the top, it can,
it can be quite dense. So I absolutely understand what they're saying. I think that there certainly is, as you say, I mean, everyone, there are many different ways to structure a pitch. There are a lot of ways to, you know, as the old saying goes, there are many ways to get to the forum. So some people may want to have numbers at the ready, but it's kind of a more quantitative presentation. But I understand exactly what they're saying, which is definitely more around the big ideas, like who you are, what the problem is, who your clients are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So especially because if we're using 3 minutes, we don't want to talk so fast that people can't even get a sense of who we are, right?
Definitely
so, okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that it's okay that my pitch this time is kind of just more of a story rather than facts.
I believe so, and I think Michelle is going to tell me if I'm wrong on that. So
okay.
I'll tell Michelle to jump in and tell me if I'm wrong. But
okay, great.
You're right.
Okay, thank you.
I'm right. Oh, woo, validation from Michelle. Michelle's my voice in the sky around here.
Okay, thank you. Our next question comes from Tanya Sullivan. Please go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi, Tanya.
I just wanted to thank you very much for Mike's call. I found the information really valuable, and I'm glad we were able to sit on it. I think it was so valuable to our pitches that I'm kind of wondering, can we have an extension on our PowerPoint that's due tomorrow now? I would have honestly appreciated kind of being able to hear a lot of that prior to completing the majority of it already. So.
Michelle, voice in the sky.
Tony, it's due on the 12th, end of day. So if that helps you, great. If not, the end of the week is okay too. I say that with 35 other people listening.
Yeah, no,
I would appreciate the end of the week. And if you do need to make minor tweaks to it and send it to me again, that's not a problem. We just have to load all the presentations into a master. So if you have little tweaks, I can replace it. But good placeholders. A placeholder for your name would be really helpful for me. And then, as I said, if you have any tweaks that need to be made, feel free to send those over when you have them as well.
Okay, great. All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Yes, of course.
And thanks for that feedback. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Our last question in the queue comes from Christine Becker. Please go ahead, Christine.
Hi. I sort of feel like a few of my questions have sort of been touched on already by the previous questions. One of mine was also I'm having trouble evaluating, how much I would ask for because I'm not in a position at this point in time to have that need, but I am looking forward to, expansion and I guess planning ahead. But then someone else has just asked about the financial piece and maybe we don't even need to have those specifics in the presentation is what I'm hearing. And is that, am I understanding correctly that we don't necessarily have to have, like a cut and guide figure that we're pitching for, per se?
Michelle?
I think it would be helpful for you in terms of feedback. We are more than happy to connect you with a board member who can help you with that. We have some really great board members who could, do a 20-minute call with you and help you figure out what where you can go in terms of your presentation. This is totally hypothetical. So, just because you're presenting it, as long as it makes sense with numbers, it doesn't have to necessarily be something that you even need or want. But just a good practice in terms of finding what that valuation would be with a specific number.
Yeah, sure, that would be great.
Yeah, okay, perfect. If you, this was Christine Becker, right?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. And for anyone else in the call, if anyone has any questions about the valuation, I cannot help you directly because
we don't value businesses,
and I'm definitely not an expert in this field by any stretch. But I would be happy to connect you with a board member and someone who can, help you figure out what that valuation would be, hypothetically speaking, so that you are prepared for your pitch. And I already have a couple of emails that have come through asking for the same thing. So you can either shoot me an email after the call or, jump on the line, and I'd be happy to send an email connecting you with one of our board members who'd be able to help you further.
Okay.
And I think a great piece there, and thank you for bringing that up, Christine, and Michelle, is that this is hypothetical, so don't worry, don't sweat over the numbers, because this is an exercise that you're doing. You don't have to be 100% on your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that that can be a little bit nerve-wracking, but don't let that hold you back. No one's actually going to be throwing money at you. I mean literal money. Do we have any other questions, Peter?
No, we have no other questions in the queue. Oh, actually, you know what? One just queued up. Sorry about that. It's Izzy Egan. Please go ahead.
Hi, Izzy.
Hi, how's it going?
Great, how are you?
Well. Good, thank you. I think I must have just had a real technical issue because I queued it up a couple of, like, when Mike was on the phone. And that's okay. It might have already been answered, and I'm sorry if it's too specific. But one of the things that have always been sort of brought up to me around the pitches is that you put your ask in. This might have already been answered, but do you want to see that? Do you want to see a hypothetical, hey, we're asking for X amount of money for Y equity or not?
I'm going to let Michelle, is that typically what?
Could you maybe repeat the question? It was a little hard to hear Izzy Larkin.
Oh, sorry, okay. I have you on a headset. I have you on a headset. Is that better?
Much better, thank you.
I have the mic right by my mouth. One of the things that has always been sort of recommended to me when you're putting pitches together has been to have your ask very clearly in at the end. So it's, we're looking for X amount of money for Y equity. Now, I know this is a practice pitch, but is it something that we should have in there so that we get used to asking for it?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
I would say so, especially with this exercise being about pitching for investment, I think that
mm-hmm.
would be a really strong part of your presentation.
So to be as specific as possible, like we're looking for $300,000 and I'm, you know, offering 10%, make it up,
yes.
whatever it is, 10%
yes.
equity.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. And I think that way, so the panel that's in each room, and sometimes it's just one person or sometimes it's two, these are all seasoned investors or people who work in this world. So, you know, the more specific you're asked, the more specific the feedback that you'll be able to get as well.
Got it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Izzy.
Thank you.
Okay,
and
thank
believe,
you.
And I believe, Peter, do we have anyone else in the queue? Or?
That's it for now.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, everyone. I know from the numbers there are 35 of you that called in, so we are so excited to see you in person next week. I cannot reiterate enough that we are here to support you. So if you have any questions, please call the office, shoot Michelle or I an email. We want to help however we can, and we are here to support you. So reach out. Otherwise, we can't wait to see you, and we hope that you're as excited as we are.
And just to add to that, on Wednesday, I'll be circulating your participant package, so you'll have an opportunity or a week or so to review that in advance of the program. We'll have our speakers' bios in there as well as the final schedule. So have a read through that. If any questions come up from that too, you can reach me. You can probably reach me over the Easter weekend over email. I'll have my laptop with me. So as Larkin said, we're here to support you and provide you with enough information to really set you up for success throughout the program, and that's what we really want as well. So anything you need from us, just send us an email or give us a call here at the office.
Thanks, everyone, and have a marvelous day.
This concludes the FWEE Series Pitching and Investment Training Conference Call. Thank you for your participation. Have a nice day.